I think the job of being a teacher is so rewarding in so many ways.
The connection between you and the whole class, that's still unbeatable.
When my pupils are successful, it feels incredible.
I think the greatest thing for me is seeing the pupils that I teach love the subject as much as I do.
I don't think there's any other job where you get the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Worldwide.
Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 633. This is your host, Danny, and also co-host of the show, we have Pete and Paris.
I give it up to Paris. He was right.
I was? What was I right about?
The Patriots with the game. Let's see.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was. Yeah. Hey,
giving you kudos.
Hey, look, at 28-3, I sure as hell didn't think I was right. I was like, oh, damn. I guess I was wrong.
Until there was, what, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, yeah. You were still kind of...
He was nervous. He was nervous. He was sweating.
But I said it in the chat, though. I go, we are a turnover away from this game completely flipping. I said it.
Yep. And then 2 minutes later...
Yep, it happened.
Strip sack fumble.
Oh, man. Yeah, but that was a crazy game after the second half. Holy crap. How things change, man.
I know. It just goes back to my point, though, that I was making the last couple weeks. I can't.
Yeah.
Like I said, my heart kept telling me Atlanta, but my brain and my wallet said, don't bet against Tom Brady and Belichick. No, I was right.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Head over to GamertagRadio.com. Post your comments and feedback and listen to our past episodes. Also visit play.it/gamertag. You could check out the show there. You could also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we're back here, and we have a lot of things to talk about. The major, major news of the day. And actually, people are going to be talking about this for a while. E3 open to the public. Not like last year. This time, you could buy tickets, y'all. You could buy tickets February 13th. I believe it's going to be early in the morning. I think so, right? The first 1,000 people, it will cost them $150. After that, $250. And here's my thing. ESA had to do this because business wasn't looking good. You know, Disney tapped out, EA tapped out, Activision, a couple of the companies tapped out. And ESA announced this now, early the year, to see, well, maybe create a buzz. Maybe some companies will think twice before bailing out. Or maybe those companies that haven't put money down yet for a booth, maybe this will change their mind to actually go back to E3 because of the amount of people that are going over there too. So there's been a huge controversy. A lot of the journalists, especially the indie journalists, are complaining like they don't like this idea at all. It's going to be harder for a lot of people to get more interviews now, to walk around during the conference and everything. And I don't know. I think that I see the good more than the bad. But at the same time, and I was telling this to Paris and other people too online. I haven't spoken to P about this, but I think that, you know, they have the right. ESA have the right to make some changes because at the end of the day, this is a business. And, you know, I've been going to E3 now for since 2005. Paris, I think since 2001. Pete, what year you started going to E3? Was it...
What year did I break my ankle?
I can't remember. It could be every day.
2011.
Yeah.
2011.
Yeah, it was the year... Oh, because it's the 1 year that Paris hasn't gone.
Yeah, because I broke my foot, so I didn't go.
Oh, yeah. So here's the thing. You know, us as, I'm speaking as an independent media podcast or whatever you want to call it. We have to adapt. I feel like sometimes we get a little bit too comfortable with the access and the stuff that we get during E3. And, you know, I seen it all. I seen E3 open to the public. Not open to the public, like easier to get media badges in the past. Then there was a time that was a lot tougher. Then they had E3 outside of the convention. They had a Santa Monica. That was a disaster, which we had to go to like different hotels. Then they went back to the convention. It was very, very small. There was no booth or anything. It was just meeting rooms. But at the same time, we adapt to that. You know what I'm saying? So if EAC already made this change for this year to have this open to the public so it could help their business, then we also, again, have to adapt to that now. You know, and they have the right to do that. So for people to be complaining and getting mad, everything will be fine, because at the same time, why are they going to make it more difficult for the media to cover all these games that's going to be at E3? The companies, and I mean, the ESA wants to have this an easy process for everyone. At the same time, they want their business partners, like everybody that have been putting money down for booth and all that, they want their games to get promoted even out there more, not because of the public, but also the media and the retailers that's going to be there, you know? So they're going to make it easy for everybody, and they want everybody, at least the majority of their partners, to be happy about this. So my thing is, why do you think EAC is going to make this so difficult for everyone? It just doesn't make no sense. It's bad for business if they do that. So if you guys want to comment, Pete Paris, I had to speak about that because I've been thinking about this all day. So
I'm sure it's been on the minds of everybody, whether you're a consumer, whether you're a prosumer, or you're someone that's media or journalism, podcasts. I mean, hell, they even said openly that YouTube streamers and Twitch streamers, those with a higher level of followers, are encouraged to register as media this year. Which,
yeah, that's good.
A, goes to show how much that genre of media has transcended, where now that, you know, there's someone that can be, you know, that there's someone who businesses legitimately look to for advertising and whatnot. From a podcast / media / blogosphere perspective, I think it's going to make things that much more difficult. In general, I'm not speaking on behalf of GTR or what have you. I'm just speaking openly. I think it's going to potentially make things a little more difficult when we're sitting in line trying to get into a particular booth to check out things.
How, Pete, if we have an appointment, how is it making it difficult?
Okay, allow me to speak. Okay, you had your chance to talk and you chose to go first, so now you can't jump on our back when we start bringing up things that you may have wanted to talk about and forgot. So time to sit down.
Not really. I'm just bringing it up. Go ahead.
No, we're not going to have that opportunity to get every single appointment that we want. We may not. And again, I'm speaking openly. And I can't speak on behalf of any other site or, you know, what have you. We can't speak for them, but we may not have those opportunities to get into every single booth and or developer, publisher, or hardware manufacturer to speak to them. So like everyone else, we have to sit in line and wait like everybody else. Adding 15,000 new people is going to make that much more difficult. And as for someone in the business, quite honestly, this is probably not the right place to go as a gamer. It's probably cool from an expectation or an environment or an experience in general to be able to get to go to something that for 90% of its time has been closed off and walled off from the public. It's been a media and business only type conference, now opening it up to the world is going to, it's going to take some time to digest. And again, I don't think E3 is the type of place for the standard, for the regular consumer to go to. If they want that, that's what PAX is for. And there's multiple PAXes. You can go to, if you live on the East Coast and you don't want to schlep to Seattle or Austin, you can go to PAX East. If you know you're down south, you can go to Austin. You don't have to go to Seattle or Boston, and vice versa. If you're on the West Coast, it's easier to hit Seattle as opposed to going to, you know, mid to cross country. I just don't think this is the right environment. I'm not saying that it's wrong. Obviously, like you said, the ESA has to do what the ESA needs to do to make money. And if this is something that they feel is the right move, you do you, boo boo. But from our perspective, at least from mine, I don't know if Paris agrees, and I don't think that Danny and I have the exact same belief on this, but
nope.
I think, me personally, I think it's a mistake because it's going to make our job as media/podcasters a little more difficult with getting to appointments, because sometimes it's difficult to get to appointments as it is. Now you're adding 15,000 people to the herd, right? Not to mention the smell and potential more conflu. That's the last thing I want to do is to come back.
That's the last thing on my mind.
Thankfully, knock on wood, I did not catch the conflu, but I know, Danny, I know you fell ill right after you got back. You were down for a couple of days.
Yeah, I was done. See, I was very sick.
See, that's the pancakes at Denny's at 3 a.m. that you was talking about. See, if you'd have been eating healthy, you'd be okay. But I digress.
It's not nothing to do. No, but I know Paris wants to say a lot of things about this, but I'll say this, Pete. I think it's not a mistake. Times have changed. Times are changing, man. You know, back then there was a lot of major media outlets that were involved with, like, magazines and stuff. They were really, really mad about, you know, up and coming writers coming up with, like, websites and so on. And then after that, it was, you know, the independent websites even more. Then it was the podcast. People got mad about that, like the major press. Then now with YouTube and Twitch. But what happened throughout the years, people adapt, man. They, something is working. They have to do that in order to continue the business. So I don't see that as a mistake, Pete. You know, if all these companies are going out and doing their own thing, ESA want them back. And the way how they want them back is, don't worry, don't waste more money to have your own thing. Come to us. We have 15,000 people. Oh, look, we sold our tickets in a day or in a few hours. Great for press. More companies can be like, should I just get a location outside of the convention, or should I do this? This will now is probably going to change a lot of companies' minds. Like, they probably will come back, or maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just still do their own thing and forget about that.
But Danny, you have to take into consideration, we're 4 months away from E3. The EAs have been planning this already since last year. And so they're not going to have, they're not 4 months out of the show going to be like, you know, we've changed our mind, we're going to scrap all of our plans, you know, let me get a booth.
EA's not coming back. They're not going to come back.
And every other company that's already stood out and said, no, you know, we're doing our own thing. I don't think this is going to be the thing that draws them back in.
Not this year, maybe next year.
And adding this last minute, now, unless they've been talking about this in back alley conferences with the regular people who purchase booths and stuff like that, which I doubt, because this type of thing would have potentially leaked out. I just don't think that this gives developers and publishers and those with booths enough time to have prepared to now have to deal with 15,000 more people. I just think if they were going to make this decision, this should have been pushed out maybe August, September, October, November of last year, not 4 months leading into the event. I don't know, but Paris has been mad quiet, which is not something we're accustomed to. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, Paris, go for it.
Okay, so I mean, like, of the three of us, I've been going to E3 the longest. I've been going since 2001, and I was going as one of those people who had no business being there, and I hustled and grinded and got in. And that's my first 5 years of going to E3, that's what I did before I, quote unquote, got a media badge and start going as media. And I've been going as media ever since. So I've seen it from both sides of the fence. And you have to remember, see, people have short memories. You have to remember, 2006 E3 was a freaking zoo because you had so many people like me who had no business being there that got in. And it was just like sardines trying to go from booth to booth and to get things done. People in the media started complaining. It became more of a sideshow than an actual event to get business done, that they panicked. And the Santa Monica experiment of 2007 happened. That didn't work. Then they went to this weird, sterile version of E3 in 2008 and 2009. And then they kind of got back to where we are today, which I thought was kind of a happy medium of there weren't too many people that didn't belong there. There was the press there and they got stuff done. See, here's the thing. I am all for the public being able to see these games and to be able to experience what I got to experience back in 2001. Whenever anyone ever goes to E3, I always say to them, that first time you go, you're going to have the deer in the headlight look because you're just going to be amazed at everything that you see, right? Because it is a special thing to be able to experience that. And trust me, I want people to experience that. And I've been going back and forth with nameless EA employee all day today on Twitter about this because my point is, keep E3. You want to invite 15,000 people? Go for it. But designate a couple days to the media. That's all I'm saying. 100%. Then give a couple days to the public. Everyone wins. We're all happy. To me, that's my happy medium. Or do something similar to Gamescom where it's super organized so that the media gets to their stuff, gets to do what they got to do. The public gets to see the things. They want to stand in line all day. They can. That's fine. I do think this is what E3 is trying to do, is adopt more of a Gamescom type model. But I also will go back to the conversations we were having last year before E3. And I'm here to tell you, too little too late. This event is starting to become more and more irrelevant. They're doing this move because EA is gone. They're not coming back. Activision is gone. They're not coming back. Bethesda is, for all intents and purposes, gone. They're not coming back. Disney is gone. They're not coming back. What this is going to do, in my opinion, it is going to push more events off site for the media. I will bet you any amount of money you want right now, I will spend more money at events outside of the convention center than I will at the convention center coming up in 2017. Because if you even go back to last year, it was probably about 50-50 where I actually dreaded going onto the show floor. And look, you can call me a complainer, elitist, a whiner, whatever. But here's the thing. When I go to E3 as a part of Gamertag Radio, we are not IGN. We're not GameSpot or Giant Bomb or any of these big guys where we got all our stuff lined up in appointments. Sure, we do get some appointments, but we also have to bust our ass on the show floor to be able to get some of the other content that we get. That Destiny interview we had last year, that Call of Duty interview we had last year, that was from hustling. That wasn't an appointment. And my only worry, if you're going to put 15,000 more people, and it will be more than 15,000, don't get it twisted because other people are going to get in too. Can I get to the things that I need to get to so that I can get my job done? Because like I said, when I go as Gamertag Radio, I'm there to work. I'm not there to have fun. We ain't having fun. We ain't out partying all day. We're busting our tail, zipping back and forth across the convention center, getting interviews and editing and doing all this other stuff. I mean, that's the point of why we go to E3. I'm just telling you, you're going to start seeing more offsite stuff. And that's if anything, like Danny thinks, oh, this might pull more people in. I think it's going to push more people away as far as the publishers go, because the media is going to get the media and business retailers are going to get more work done in meeting rooms upstairs or in places offsite instead of on that show floor. And that's getting away from what the original point of E3 was all about. I still say you have PAX. Multiple PAXes at this point. Mm-hmm. You have Gamescom. You know, you have events for the public to go to and see these game and experience them. You have Call of Duty XP. There's going to be a Destiny Con. There's going to be all these things, PlayStation experience. This is for the public to consume this content and enjoy it and get close to developers. Talk, look, we're not opening up GDC to the public. Why don't we just do that? If we're doing that, why don't we have the public just mingling with all the developers for a week? You know, it's the same thing.
Same with DICE.
That's my point. And look, I know I may sound like I'm whining. I'm just trying to look at it from the other point of view of, yes, I want the public to be able to experience this stuff. But at the same time, I want to be able to get the content that we promise you guys every year when we go to E3. And I just worry about adding, because it's going to be more than 15, adding 20 plus thousand people to the mix. It's just, we're getting back closer to 2006, in my opinion. And it was impossible to get anything done. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And here's the thing too. Like, we've been hearing about this for a while now. People are like, oh, why didn't open to the public? So then they make this change and now people are now complaining again. Like, I feel like no matter what they do, it still is going to be the same type of, you don't think so, Paris? It's working for Gamescom. So why it won't work for ESA?
That's what I think they're going to do. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just pointing out, look, I'm being devil's advocate is what I'm trying to do. To me, the best scenario for this is Tuesday and Wednesday is for media. Thursday and add Friday to the mix is for the public. We're good. We're fine. And if the media wants to stick around Thursday and Friday and deal with that, like if there's some interviews, appointments or things that they miss, you have the opportunity. But just be aware that the public is going to be there too. But at the same time, remember, like we said, EA Play. EA is avoiding this altogether. They're doing all this stuff even before E3 starts. And I'm telling you, that's going to be the blueprint moving forward. You think Activision is going to stay up in a couple meeting rooms this year? No, they're going to have something offsite this year. I promise you. I bet you any amount of money you want, Activision have something offsite this year. Bethesda did it last year, which, by the way, they also opened to the public too. So it wasn't just media. They had their offsite event. I'm just telling you, this is a last gasp attempt by the ESA for E3 to stay relevant. I said it last year. I will say it again. It is losing its relevance because why am I going to go to the show floor and be on that show floor and have to deal with that madness when I can hold my own event and I can control the complete message and do my own thing? I said it last year. And if anything, this kind of, in my opinion, proves my point because I bet you we see more people do the same. Everyone that's gone ain't coming back. ESA is just trying to hold on to what they have. Trying to hold on to what they have. Because I said it before, if Microsoft or Sony leaves, it's a freaking wrap. It's done.
Oh, game over. Game over after that. Game over big time. I don't know, man. I think we'll be fine. I think right now everybody's panicking. Let's just...
I don't like that you say that though. That is freaking annoyed me all day today. I'm allowed to, because I'm allowed to have my opinion on it, right?
No,
I'm not saying you specifically. I'm just saying social media in general. Oh, stop complaining. Stop whining about it. Blah, 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 blah. It's not whining. It is reality.
It is reality.
Everything ain't unicorns and rainbows. Okay, you have to look at it from the other side too. There's a positive to this, absolutely, because the public gets a chance to see this stuff too. But there's also a negative to it as well, because look, we're not IGN. All right, we're not guaranteed our appointment slots for every game and every title. We're not going to have publishers begging us to see their stuff. We get what we can when we can. Right? I just hope this doesn't limit what we can do. And that may sound selfish, but if you're listening to this podcast, you should want us to be able to have access to everything that we can. I don't need a bunch of overexcited fans, which is what it's going to be, stopping me from getting to an appointment because the convention center floor is just overly crowded. That's all I'm saying. If that comes off as complaining, then so be it. But if I spend the money and the resources to go to E3 for a week, I want to be able to take full advantage of it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So I have something to say about that, Paris. So remember years ago when they had the event at Santa Monica, and then after that, they had that weird, strange meeting rooms, E3? What was the thing that a lot of people that were there were saying? They were saying, man, the excitement is not there. E3 has to come back with the excitement, like something to excite people, man. Because right now it seems like, come to my meeting room, check out this game, do an interview, and so on, right? So now they're getting the fans to come to E3 And I think in a way it's going to bring that excitement back, man. Besides the whole getting the interview part, which I totally understand, Paris, don't get me wrong. It's not like it's going to be super easy for us to get an interview. So I'm not saying that. But at the same time, from my point of view, I feel like it's great from the industry because there's an excitement because, dude, the thing that bothers me the most when we go to an event, to a private event that we get invited from a company and we're there and there's journalists, they're just kind of like, well, I'm here. I'm so bored. I don't even know why I'm here. And they getting those access. But there's people out there that would love to get the opportunity, man. They would love to get the opportunity, Paris. And this will be a great way to just be excited, man. Something that a lot of these developers that we're working on for years, man, and they see somebody super, super excited to see that. You know what I'm trying to say, Paris? Like, I feel like there's both ways, man.
But that's not the point of E3. That's all I'm saying.
I know what you're saying, Paris. I totally agree with it. But at the same time, Paris, there's a lot of these media outlets, their think is like, you know, I'm supposed to have access because I'm so-and-so. That's another thing that bothers me, man. You know, it's not about just you, not you, but I'm saying like the journalists out there, you know, like ones are the ones that are probably mad about this move, you know, because they think they're the only ones that have to have access. Forget about everybody else. It's only them and that's it. Oh, I'm first than everybody else, you know? So I don't know. I see from both sides, man. I think it's a good thing, man. It's cool, you know, to let the fans enjoy it, man. I just don't have any issues with that. And I think that, yes, you said that. Give that feedback to ESA and even video game companies that are planning to make appointments and try to make it easier for everybody that are trying to get this interview. They do that, hey, you know what? Great. And if they don't, then I'll be complaining. I'll be mad. Like, yo, this is wrong. They're not doing it the right way. So that's all I have to say. That's it. Nobody else wants to say anything. We good?
I don't know. We all have our individual
opinions.
Of course.
Yeah, it's just an opinion. I mean,
you're not wrong about your opinion. Paris isn't wrong. I've had this argument before. I can't argue. I can't say that what Paris is saying is wrong. That's his personal opinion, and that's how he feels. And you know, same for us. I just personally, and I've said this in the past, and I'm not stepping back. I'm not moonwalking on what I've said in the past. And, you know, to a certain degree, what Paris was saying is something that I agree with. The fact that we're there to work, to hustle, and to get content for our listeners and our show, it's going to be that much more difficult. Because remember, it's not a 15,000 people all in. It's the thousands of people that are there already. Then you're throwing in 15,000 people more on top of that. So traversing the halls, getting from the North Hall to the ghost town of South Hall is going to be that much more difficult now, right? Trying to traverse that central hall, you know, which is only a finite amount of space of people going, you know, north to south and south to north, it's going to be that much more difficult.
Because I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off, but think of it this way too. That 15,000, that is 15,000 of the most hardcore gaming fans in the world, right? So they're going to be there when the doors open and they ain't leaving until the doors close. It ain't going to be no in and out. They're going to be there all day. And that's what all I mean. Day. You're adding 15,000 persistent people to the convention center. And look, I know this sounds like complaining. I truly do. And I know people are just rolling their eyes. Well, Paris, you get to go every year, so why don't you let the other brother go? I want you to go. just give me a couple of days to get all the interviews and stuff that we want out of the way. And then you come in and knock yourself out. Because then I'm going to leave.
Now, let me ask you this question to you guys. That's 15,000 people that are buying tickets. Now, is this also... Oh, they're going to be adding also like, okay, Microsoft, you can invite 1,000 of your fans to go to the booth. Yeah. Sony, 1,000. I think we also have to add those people.
That's why I said it's going to be more than 15,000. I mean, it's going to be over 20 easily. Easily.
Oof. Oof.
This is my point. This is what I'm saying.
On top of the 80 to 85, 90,000 people that are there legit. I don't want to, and I take that back, not legitimately, because people will be buying tickets, you know, but that are there from a business perspective to try to get things done, whether it be interviews or, you know, a product review before it comes to market, you know, we're there to work. I mean, last couple, not to pat ourselves on the back, but last year, did we go to a party? I think the only one we, I think, I mean,
Pactor.
Right.
I don't even see that's a party.
And that's one, too.
One. That's one. And then there was an after hours thing that Paris and I went to at the Golden Gopher. That was it. Other than that, we were there to get our content, go to the studio and record, try to catch some sleep.
And look,
rinse and repeat.
And I will say again, for the record, to everyone listening to this, I'm not trying to sound like an entitled prick, because again, I started off in this whole thing being a person that had no business being at E3. So I understand why. Look, I'm one of the most lucky people on the freaking planet because I get to do this. I trust me. I get it. I appreciate it. I understand it. And I respect it. It's just that if I'm going to if I'm going to wear that media badge, I want to be able to cover all the games. That's all. That's all. And I just think, let's have a little bit of separation so that the media can get their job done and the public can experience it at the same time. That's all. That is all I'm saying. And look, this is day one. We don't have all the information yet. Maybe they do have this plan and it's all going to work out and it'd be freaking great, you know, but I'm Mr. Negative according to the emailers. So Mr. Negative has to give his opinion.
Yo, okay. So let me ask you this before we wrap this whole topic. What if they have one section of the hall that is only for the fans and the other section for the media? Do you think that will work out? Oh, that's a disaster.
A disaster, because I don't see, I don't see Nintendo or Sony, for example, they're not going to split their booth. You know what I mean? Microsoft's not going to split their booth. So yeah, that's just a disaster.
At that point, it's a bigger expense at that point. If you're trying to split those things. But like Paris said, and I think Gamescom is the ultimate model to follow. Give press media business, you know, Monday through Wednesday, and then give Thursday through Saturday to the public. And if press media wants to go Thursday through Saturday, hey, that's on you. You know, you do you. But I got Monday through Wednesday to get your job.
I actually have a solution for this, but it wouldn't work because just the way E3 is set up, and you're asking these poor PR people and people that these publishers hire to work these booths to work some ridiculous hours. You could do E3 like we do it now, and then either open it early. Yeah, either it's opens earlier, like at 8 a.m. for the media. From 8 to 10, it's media only, or do it from 6 to 8 at night. For media only, but that's not going to happen either.
No, that night is not going to work. But I think opening early for the press, I think makes more sense. That makes more sense, I think.
Yeah.
Or have it Tuesday straight only for the media, and then the last 2 days have it early for the media, and then later, like an afternoon, for the public.
Yeah. You know what? It'd be great. It'd be great if we could get Rich on again and talk.
Yeah,
about
we should
this.
Get Rich. I should hit him up. I'll contact Rich. That would be awesome. All right, so I'm going to take a little short break here, and once we come back, I'm going to play an interview that I recorded during an independent gaming event here in Miami that just happened a couple weeks ago. Vitaly was there and everything. So we'll be right back, and after this, we have more stuff to talk about. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're here now in Miami, Florida, and now we're interviewing here someone that worked on the game Soul Keeper. It's a VR game for, I played it on the Oculus Rift, and what's your name and what you do?
My name is Wesley Farino. I'm a lead animator on the Soul Keeper VR.
So tell us a little bit about this game. I played it, I'm not going to lie, the first time I was like all over the place. I was playing pretty bad, but the second time, I felt like I was doing a lot better. I got used to the controllers and everything. It was just a little bit tricky. I've never played VR. I think it's like, actually, this is like my second time playing a VR game. So tell us, for those that don't know much about the game, tell a little bit about that.
Well, the game follows a character named Isoropos, okay? And you, the level that you just played is a level that's deeper in the game with the troll. And the interaction between you and the troll becomes more apparent once we release the game. I don't want to release too much information. But what you just had right here was one of the main big boss fights of the game. Like, basically, this is, I don't want to say the climax, but it is one of the big cornerstones of what the game is going to be about. Like, that action sequence, the whole fight for your life, and you're at the edge of your seat the whole time. That's what we're going for in this game.
And how long you guys been working on this? I mean, I know you're an independent game developer and stuff. And how difficult has it been for you guys, too? Because you guys are a very small group of people that have been working on this, right?
That is correct. Me, personally, I have been on the game for 3 months now. Myron hired me to animate. He's actually been working on this game, the concept on this game, I guess 12 years now. Maybe even a little bit longer than that. He first wanted to do it for consoles, and then with the whole emergence of VR, he decided to move his efforts to VR. So basically, what you're playing here is like a sequel to what the console is. So like this, what happens in the VR game actually correlates to what happens in the console game.
So why VR? Why go into that area compared to the regular consoles?
It's a small market right now. And Myron and basically Helm Systems is about being the best quality for what's out there. We saw what was out there, or Myron saw what was out there, and he wasn't happy with what the content was. He figured that using what he had already, he could build something that would wow the audiences. And I mean, it didn't take him long to sell me on it, you know, and brought me on and showed me some stuff. I had never played VR until I tried out Soul Keeper, and I was like, I have to be a part of this.
Yeah, I mean, for you, what is it you like, got your attention with VR for you as a designer? Give me the...
Well, as an animator, it's like you actually get to play that cinematic role. You're no longer looking at just a screen. You're being a part of the actual action. You're there. So everything that I do as a designer affects you as a player. For instance, like the bull rush. Like, that was something that we designed between us. And we thought, you know, we have to have that one attack that just, like, makes everybody... Can I cuss? No, okay. All right. But it's basically that, oh, crap moment, you know? And that's every meeting we have is, like, how can we make you on edge? Like, we'll give you the moments where you can breathe or whatever, but at every turn in this game, whether it's just the scenery, the modeling, I mean, just if you look at some of the textures and some of the lighting in this game, it's like you don't see any other VR right now doing that. And for us as an independent developer to be doing that, I mean, it's a testament to the what's the word that I'm looking for here? I'm sorry. The talent that we have on this team. There's only 5 developers on this team. I'm the lead animator, and we have one rigger, and he helps me with animation sometimes. We have 2 programmers, and that's about it. Myron, who's the head of Helm Systems, he does all the modeling. He's in. He does the character designs. I mean, that's all him.
And is this your first time working on a VR game?
VR game, yes.
So, I mean, how challenging is it to work on something like VR compared to like a regular PC game or console game?
It's totally different because while in console gaming, they tell you have to maintain, you know, the animation has to look good from every angle. In VR, it's times 10, especially with a troll that's 40 foot tall. You know, I have to make sure that those fingers look right, you know, because the person could be standing anywhere in the room, as you saw when you were teleporting. That animation has got to look spot on from every angle. So every time that I'm animating, I have to put on the VR goggles, you know, run it through Unreal and see how that looks. And it's very challenging, time-consuming, but, man, it's so rewarding when you hear the crowd just going wild for it.
I mean, where this game is going to be available for those that are interested?
Well, right now we do have a storefront in Steam, in the Steam VR, I believe. If not, it's in Steam. And they can follow there. We, Myron tonight has said that early access is going to be Q1 2017. I can't say much more than that because, to be honest, I don't even know when exactly we're going to release. But we are very close.
Website or anything that would like to get more updates or anything like that in the future? Twitter, social media?
Well, the Soul Keeper VR has a Twitter account. We're on Reddit. And we also, the soulkeepervr.com, we have a forum there. We encourage everyone in the community to join. If you guys see the trailers, anything like that, we encourage the feedback from the community because at the end, you guys are the ones that we're making this game for. So we want to make sure we make the best game for you.
I know you guys are here locally in Miami. For those that are up and coming, they want to start their own game independently and stuff. Any advice for those independent developers that are trying to do their own thing too?
Patience and quality. Make sure that what you make is it's something that you have a passion for. Don't make a game for just making a game. Make sure it's something that you want to play. And I give that to across the board, whether you're artist, animator, programmer, make sure that it's something that you want to play. Because if you want to play it, chances are the rest of the world's going to want to play it.
How excited are you? You guys going on the cruise to promote this game and too and everything, man. How excited are you? And plus, it's like a little vacation too, man, right?
Actually, we're not going on this cruise.
Oh, you know. Oh, I thought you were guys going to.
No, we're trying to get the early access done. So we had to drop out from the cruise. So we're not getting any sleep right now.
okay, thanks a lot, man, for the interview, man.
No problem. Thanks. Have us anytime. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, man.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here, and that was a great interview and also a roundtable discussion about this whole E3 open to the public. What do you guys think? Give us a call or email us and let us know your feedback about this, you know. And we'll see. I think that once they open this website, where people could purchase these tickets to attend E3. First, I think the site is going to crash. Mm-hmm. That's for sure, because there's so many people trying to buy it. Second, I think it's going to sell out, and maybe the same day or the next day, the ESA will release a press release saying we sold out, this is great, and then create this buzz. You know, so I think that's what's going to happen. What do you guys think?
I guess that's what's going to happen. I mean, I don't see ticket sales extending beyond a week. I think that'll
not
be
even
too long.
Hours. I think hours.
The standard gamer doesn't really have. I don't know, and I don't want to sound petty or snobbish. $150 for a ticket is pretty expensive. $250 is a little bit more. Considering this is going to be for, 4 or 5 days, not to mention travel, you gotta fly out, you gotta get your hotel. Yeah. People that are local might be a little bit more, it might be easier to deal with. The other concern that we have to be worried about is people buying chunks of tickets and then scalping them,
selling it. Yeah,
so that's that. I wonder, because I know over the last year or two, they've really, the ESA has really clamped down on people getting in where you're forced to show your ID along with your badge. So I'm wondering if maybe the ESA has thought about that and said, okay, well, we'll buy the badge. You could buy your badge, your $250 badge, but that's tied to the name that you registered to buy the ticket, and only you get to have that ticket. You know what I mean?
Paris, wasn't back in the days you have to take a picture in order to get that badge, and they'll put your face part of the badge? Wasn't that like that back in the day?
Yeah, I don't think it was every year, but I think, a couple years they did something like that.
But that was also the same amount of time where it was like $800-$900 for the ticket, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. $250 now, Pete, compared to $900? Yeah, go with the $250. By the way, before we wrap it up.
I also wonder if this maybe makes things a little bit easier for the smaller sites. I know we've spoken to a couple people on, I know it's like, Joe has had some difficulty getting in, I think. Maybe even, still having issues trying to get in. Maybe this is a perfect avenue for those smaller sites who have solid content, but don't have the pure volume that the ESA looks at when it comes to giving them media badge access, while they won't be able to take advantage of things like the media, you know, the media cafe, where you can go in and you can sit down and you have internet and you know, computers to upload your content, or the break room, but gets them in the door.
I see where you're coming from, Pete, but I see what you're saying, Pete, about the smaller sites. But I think that by the time these smaller sites register and everything to try to get a media badge, these tickets are going to be already like sold out. Like, I really doubt if they really want this, they have to buy it like that same day if they really want to try to attend E3, you know? So, by the way, before we wrap it up, very quick, what are your guys' thoughts about there's going to be a Castlevania TV show on Netflix? I just read that.
Honestly, I don't get the excitement for that type of TV show on Netflix.
Paris, you're not excited about it?
I think it has potential to take some of the Castlevania lore if they take it serious. If there's a serious take on it, and it's kind of, you know, vampire hunter, vampires, that whole thing, I think it could be interesting. I mean, we'll see. Hey, it's Netflix, man. I always give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, sure. Look at Voltron, guys. Voltron is amazing.
Yep.
By the way, Paris, I just started now watching more episodes because I had to finish a series before I started with Voltron. I don't like going watching multiple episodes at the same time.
All I got to say is, when both of you guys finish it, season two, you let me know, because I love that ending.
I saw the first one, and I've seen like three episodes like chopped up as I'm walking in the door from the gym, and my daughter's watching. I think my daughter just watched the last episode today. And so I need to sit down and dedicate some time to actually watching that.
Yeah, you do.
Cause it deserves it. It truly does deserve it.
It's really good. And this is from a guy that wasn't a fan of the Lion Voltron as a kid. I think it's really good.
Oh yes, we know. Yeah. We know. So we're going to wrap it up here. Head over to GamertagRadio.com or play.it/GamerTag. Listen to our past episodes and find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@GamertagRadio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/GamertagRadio.
Oh, I have one other thing before we get out of here.
All right, go for it.
Ooh, Jesus. Never mind.
Go for it.
No, you know, I was talking about I was going to start playing Uncharted 4 again. So I have. I've started playing Uncharted 4 again. Right. And I'll just say, visually, playing on a PlayStation 4 Pro, the update to 4K with the HDR, I mean, it's just beautiful. Beautiful game. I got to say, I'm at to the point where I'm into some of the high action stuff. It's a lot of fun. I almost want to take back what I said. I'm almost ready to say that, but I want to finish it first before I 100% want to take back what I said. But the back end of it, I'm really enjoying the second half of Uncharted 4. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It actually, too, it's almost like a slow roll. Like it takes its time to catch that momentum. And then finally, when it does hit, it's like, okay, this is what we're waiting for.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's good, Paris. That's good. What's your next game you're going to be playing on PlayStation Pro, PlayStation 4 Pro?
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Ooh.
Cause I mean, that's out. And
you're going digital or you're buying the actual disc?
I might buy the actual disc, because, dude, Amazon Prime, man, you get it for $47.
Oh, that's right. If you're Amazon Prime members, you know what? I might do that. I was thinking about that. Huh.
Is there any multiplayer associated with that game?
No.
I might just pick it up then.
He really wants to stay away from everybody. Like,
no, it just you don't even catch the point, Danny. Jesus, you're just trying to poke the bear on that. No, I don't have the PS. I don't have PSN anymore. You know, I let that lapse back in December. I let that lapse back October, November. Haven't played it since since Paris, you know, Sherpa'd me through the raid back in August, September. I haven't turned on my PlayStation 4. I'm pretty sure I'm like 12 updates behind. But yeah, I've had no desire or need to fire that thing up. So this is probably a rock solid reason to probably, you know, get the pre-order in, get it on Amazon, and then, you know, I got plenty of time. I got plenty of time to update my PS4.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll go for it.
No, I was just gonna say, I've been taking since the holiday and this early part of the year, get caught up on my back catalog, you know, and play a lot of single player games. I want to get Horizon Zero Dawn. I want to play Mass Effect. I want to get these things out of the way of the single player stuff. Because look, I ain't gonna lie, when Destiny 2 drops in September, I'm gone again. So I got to get all this stuff out of the way now, or I'll never get to it. And I've been playing Gears 4 a lot too, just stuff like that. You know, I'm just trying to just broaden my gaming library, because I definitely got sucked into Destiny for a good year and a half. That was it, man. I was barely playing anything else. That and Witcher. So I'm trying to broaden my horizons and play some other things.
Man, hey, Paris is going to disappear once that game gets announced and releases.
Oh, dude. Speaking of E3, when they announced that, when a certain Bungie employee is on stage at the PlayStation press conference and announces Destiny 2, I'm going to stand up, I'm going to cheer, and then I'm going to hit him up and be like, hey, man, let me get in the back room so I can play it.
And it's going to be like, it's going to be Paris and the X-Wing all over again.
Yep. Exactly like that, man. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. And until next time, peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.